In Psalms 38:8, it says, "I am feeble and severely broken. I groan because of the turmoil of my heart." Not only are there pressures that can cause a person to react, there's pain that a person experiences that can cause them to shut down and to close up. And we want to try to identify that. We want to see if we can figure out what that is. Causes of emotional pain, some of it is traumatic childhood memories, things that happened that never should have happened. Or it can be non-traumatic childhood memories, things that should have happened that never happened. And I oftentimes will say that people are damaged primarily in one of these two ways. It's either getting something that they never should have gotten, and that will come in the form of pressure or abuse, or not getting something that God designed for every single person to get, and that simply is not being loved or not having their emotional needs met. You know, the number one question on that little sheet that I had you kind of use just as prompts last night, the one question that I've had people come back to my office after an evening or being away and coming back to the next session, I've had people say, when we got to the question that says, has anyone ever cared for the emotional needs of your heart? And it's like I'll have a wife say, I asked my husband that question, and it was kind of like he was dumbfounded. I'm not even sure if I know what the emotional needs of my heart are. I don't know if I even know what that question is asking. I don't even know how to really relate to what is being, what we're even talking about here. And what that tells me is that a person, it doesn't mean that they weren't clothed, they didn't have food to eat, there wasn't provision for them for a lot of their needs in life, but emotionally, someone failed to connect. And there's a lot of people that come from conservative backgrounds that never really ever witnessed any emotional connection or any affection that was demonstrated or shown, even in the way of saying, I love you. I had one man in my office said that his dad always used to have this phrase, I told your mother I loved her when I married her. If anything ever changes, I'll let her know. And how would you like that? I think we need being reaffirmed. We need to hear it often. It's something that establishes a groundwork within us to have that reaffirmed to us. And yeah, it can be somewhat of a challenge, and I know it's not always fun to think about those things. But if that was the case, what can we do, or how can we make a difference? But we're going to focus on some of these things. So things that should have happened that never happened. And then there's unconfessed sin. We carry guilt or shame inside. And there's a lot of people that carry things inside their heart, little secret. You remember that little clip, and the guy picked up the baggage, and yes, my secret sin. It's the things in my life that I would just rather that no one ever knew, that no one would ever find out, and yet before God, I stand guilty. And it becomes very difficult to get through that. We can beat ourselves up. The enemy can play against us in that. Emotional issues will affect how we view ourselves. It will affect the way that we'll look at how we stand or how we're dealing with certain things. It affects how we respond to others. If there's pain in our heart, then we're going to be challenged. It affects how we treat other people. If I sold you a car and I told you that, hey, you can trust me, you don't even need to check it out. This car has barely even been broke in. An older lady owned it and she only drove it to church on Sunday and to get groceries once a week. So you trust me, you buy the car. And you drive 2 miles down the road and the transmission goes out. You call me up and I start laughing. And I say, you should have not trusted me. I'm only after the sale. we don't give refunds here, and I'm sorry about that, but you're just going to be, sorry about your luck. How's that going to make you feel? Do you feel like it's going to make you feel like treating me differently? I think it will. Pretty extreme, perhaps. You're probably even going to feel, if you're like me, and I'll be honest, I probably would feel like that guy needs to pay somehow. So I probably wouldn't go slash all the tires on the cars on his lot or key all of them, but I probably might feel like it inside. And really, that's how it can affect how we start acting because of something that pained us. It hurt. And it caused us to react. It affects how we react when someone touches our pain. Someone gets close to it. So two months down the road, I recover. And I got rid of the junk. Or I went to get a transmission, and as soon as I walk in and talk to the guy about this transmission, it's a used one, and he says, hey, you don't have to check it out. This thing come out of a car, and an older lady had it. She drove to church on Sunday and just to get groceries once a week. How do you think I'm going to react to that person? You can fool me once, but I forget that saying, but you probably know it. It's like, second time, shame on myself for letting you treat me that way. But it does affect how we react when someone else touches our pain. It affects our perspective. I'm not sure I can trust anyone who sells cars. I'm not sure if it's safe to really, I'm going to be more careful. And we went to buy a car one time, and I don't know why I'm picking on car salesmen. If there's any here, I'm sorry. I know there's good car salesmen out there. There's a Christian guy back east, and he buys cars for many different people, and they trust him. He buys them through auction, and I think he really has a good business, and he does a good service in helping others. So all car salesmen aren't like that. It can change our perspective, though. But we went to a car salesman one time, and we took a couple of our children along. That's kind of the way it was when our children were smaller. We took them, and I think you probably do, too. We're sitting in this guy's, we drove the car, came back. He's penciling around over there in his desk, but he had this little lapel right up here on his coat. And it says, I think it said God Bless America. It was some kind of religious little lapel pin. And it had something about, or I love Jesus, maybe that's what it was. But he kept using a phrase over and over again. Now, I'm just going to be honest with you. Well, we didn't buy the car. We walked out of there, and I'm not sure how old my son was. He probably would have been 7, 8. Anyway, we walked out of there, and first thing he said, if that guy loved Jesus so much, why did he kind of have to keep telling us that he was going to be honest? So I think you kind of get the drift on the car. We move on from them. Sometimes it can affect how we view God. Can I trust you? God, are you really going to be there for me? I've trusted you before, and you weren't there. I'm not sure that it's safe. God, if I put my hands in your hand, where are you going to lead me? Are you going to take me down a road that I'm going to be scared, or it's going to be uncomfortable? And it can affect us. So what is core emotional pain? It's anything that I react to. It's what kind of tilts my cart. It's what really kind of empties my bucket. It causes me to react in some way. It's anything that causes me to want to protect myself emotionally. I put up a guard. I'm not going to let you get close to that. Anything that I am sensitive to. And sometimes you know how you can even be around certain people and you talk about certain things and you know that that's kind of almost taboo because they're not going to react to it very well. I keep forgetting. I need to stand right in front of this thing. So what are the consequences of core emotional pain? Feelings lock up inside. It affects my identity. It changes me as a person. I become different. It drives my behavior. The enemy uses it to suggest lies to me. I start believing things that are not true. That person didn't invite me. I start believing it must be because they don't like me. I wonder why they don't like me. And then you go down this path of buying into this lie that's based or has its roots in just a feeling that you have of being rejected or someone betrayed you in some way. But the enemy will use that and he will attack you. Common ways core pain is created. One is all of these areas of pressures. Expectations, dominance, control, expressiveness, not being talked to, someone focusing on themselves, anger, and critical, being critical and judgmental. And then there's another one, and it's called abuse. And there are things that people encounter and experience that can create a lot of emotional pain, a lot of weight that they carry. I have a little video clip that I'm going to share with you. It's pretty graphic, and it is it does speak fairly explicitly, and it really demonstrates the effect that abuse can have on a heart. And so I'm just going to say that if there's anyone that feels discomfort, or if this is just more than what you really want to take in, Don't feel bad if you just feel like you want to get out and walk away. Go ahead and do that. But I do think that it is something that is real in the life, in the world that we live in. It's even real in the cultures that we live in. I wished it wasn't so, but it really is. Things that some have to endure, and they carry that all through their life. So I'm going to share that here with us.
This is who I am. I am unseen, unheard, unwanted. That is what I am. Even I am anything.
Oh,
the same thing that held me up forced me down. The world turned upside down and the order disappeared. Nothing is how it's supposed to be. And a heavy sadness filled my soul. Deeper and deeper I fell within myself. And nothing could draw me out. Trapped in the misery of my life. Lost in the sorrow of my soul. Unable to see the light. Unable to see the dawn. To feel. To hope. And I found the darkest days of my life kept coming. The blackest nights that my soul never stopped. It seemed like it was always nighttime, and nightmares, and never morning. Maybe you wonder why, but mostly you try not to think about it, and try to get by, and try to survive, and all the other stuff seems so much like nothing, compared to just wanting the most important things back again, like wishing you could see your mom smile again, and hear her sing that one favorite song, all calming down. And things were all messed up. Or if you couldn't have it back, at least get to take care of your baby brother. Cause you know he needs you. And he's gonna be so scared all alone. And who's gonna hold his hand and whisper it'll be alright to him? And who will whisper it to me? I know I am helpless, dependent, desperate, but what happens when those you need the most threaten your very existence? I've heard plenty of promises, and they all sound the same. Push hard enough, and sooner or later, they all prove to be empty. The sun comes up every morning, but do you know where? Each place is somewhere different. It's hard to find east when you keep moving around. But at least it comes. It always comes. I've come to depend on that. And slowly, slowly seasons changed around me. and it seemed, this time, that maybe the world would not be pulled out from under me again. Feet safe, roots starting to grow, little buds of hope forming, slowly attempting to trust this new life.
Hey, come on over. Let me show you what I got for you. It's your gift.
This my past, my history, my story, is not my fault. It's not because of me. And doesn't have to be what defines my future. I am lovable. I am worthy of care. And that glimmer of light, it makes all the difference. The glimmers of light give me hope that someday my summer will come.
You can see just from that clip, it really describes in a lot of different ways how a person's heart can be damaged and it can be wounded. And it's not it's really not a pretty sight. But when you start looking at someone from the angle of what they've experienced, you start seeing them differently. And sometimes they won't treat you nicely. Sometimes they might not understand you. Sometimes they might not want to even go to places that you make the appeal for them to go. But I think one of the things that this little clip does demonstrate, when she finally peeked around the corner, she had the dress on. It's like in that home, something was starting to give her just a little glimmer of hope and light. And then she seen that lady on the phone. And you could see immediately within her eyes, and as she went back to the room, and she even broke the one thing that she had carried with her from her home there as she was jerking everything around, that she felt like this is an empty promise too, that someone else is giving up on me. I just want to encourage you that God doesn't give up on us. And he really doesn't want us to give up on someone either. I know that some of you may have people in your life that have been real challenges. And maybe you've even done some things and maybe beat yourself up and wondered if you've did everything right, and maybe you've even caused some of the damage. But I just want you to know something, that every circumstance in life is redeemable with God. There's always hope with him. And that's where we can really turn to. He really is the one that gives us the answer. But there are abuse issues that people encounter in life, and sometimes they can be brutal. Sometimes they can be extreme. I am never surprised at the things that people share, and yet sometimes I am amazed that someone has experienced or had to go through some issue. But having and this can affect even the way that we respond in relationship, even in a marriage. Abuse issues, there's physical abuse. The characteristics of a physically abused person is they emotionally detach. They pull away. They have anger issues. Everything is always a big challenge for them. They have low sympathy, or it's hard for them to really see where someone else is at, because they don't feel like anyone really sees where they're at and has experienced the hardness that they've had to endure. They have difficult trusting. They can be rebellious. Sexual abuse. Did I go too fast? Sexual abuse. This is an area where it happens and can create and cause more damage. And really, as a person that listens to people's struggles, it makes me angry. That someone violates another person and robs them of their innocence or takes something from them that is not their right. And it can do a tremendous amount of damage in the life of an individual. And it can cause them a lot of struggle in a relationship. The characteristics of someone sexually abused, they can become promiscuous. They can come to a point of not being able to respond sexually. And I don't know what makes the difference. But you can take two similar cases, two similar situations, and you can have two different individuals. And perhaps let's just use the example of someone being violated in some way. And one is stimulated out of that experience and becomes very wide open sexually, no restraint. Another looks at sex as nothing but disgusting, distasteful, and dirty, and they want nothing to do with it. And so you can imagine what that does in a relationship and how that can wound something that God has designed to be an expression and something that is enjoyable to experience in the confines of marriage. And it can distort. There was a girl, or lady, 45 years old. She sat in my office. Her mother came with her, and she was single. She's a school teacher. And she shared an experience. She said, or her mother validated this, this girl was a very happy-go-lucky, never meet a stranger, just a vibrant, giddy little girl. And they were playing, they were in the park one day, had a picnic, and they were in the park. And while they were playing, these two little boys came up. This girl was more of a redheaded girl. She had freckles. And even when she was with me at 45 years old, I just could visualize this little girl just by the way she looked. these two little boys come running up, and one of them said, "Ooh, you're the most ugliest little girl I've ever seen." And she remembers the other little boy saying, "That wasn't very nice to say," and they ran off. And her mother said from that day forward, something changed in her little girl. That she no longer was that happy-go-lucky, giddy little girl that never met a stranger. She became quiet. She became withdrawn. She really stuck her nose in books, and she read. And even as she's sharing that, in my office, however many years later, 39 years later, she's got tears coming down her eyes because she still feels like that she's this ugly little girl. And it affected her. When she became in her early teens, she figured out how she could get boys to notice her. And if she couldn't get them to see her by attracting them with the way she looked, then she figured out another way. And she became very loose and immoral. She ended up getting pregnant, and the guy was willing to marry her, but he only stuck around about 2 months, and then he booked out. So here she was, this young teenage girl, and still in high school, and she was pregnant, and she gave birth to this little boy. There were people that reached out to her, helped her get her high school diploma, and then helped her to get into college, and she was able to get a four-year degree and get her teaching degree. And she's been a single mother ever since. But even at 45 years old, the wound of that statement just etched something deep, and it caused a lot of behavioral response that really kind of made this girl, as she would look at it, kind of made a lot of messes in her life, a lot of regrets. Abuse can be very painful. A person can tend to develop low sympathy. They become hardened. They become calloused. I guarantee you that if you would go out here, or if you go to Sandpoint, or go to Coeur d'Alene, or Spokane, and you talk to anyone who's out there prostituting themselves on the street, they're going to have a hardness about them. There's going to be a resistance to anyone coming close. But I would guarantee you that within the life of every one of those individuals, there's a story. And I can't guarantee that there's been abuse, but I would suspect that somewhere there's been violation in that person's life. Something has happened to them. And they're out there living a life that a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this, of looking at them and thinking, you know what, you're just kind of the dregs of society. You're just kind of living a low life and in the gutter. And you need to make something different. But you know what, maybe they would like something different, but they don't know how to get out of that rut. Or maybe they're so caught in that grip and they've allowed themselves to be so tainted that it's almost hard for them to see anything different. They can become angry. They can dominate out of their pain. Everyone that's been sexually abused typically will pull a switch and inside will make a strong statement and commitment to themselves that no one will ever take advantage of me again. And so then they'll dominate out of their pain. Spiritual abuse. Spiritual abuse is something that is very, it's prevalent in our society, in our world. A lot of people have walked away, have left, just simply because they feel like they've been squelched or squished by someone using God or Scripture. It's like someone we were just mentioning at the breakfast table this morning. I know of an individual that is really challenged where they are in their fellowship, and they're really, and I am aware of it, but they are not making a shift or move and going to the world. They're just feeling like moving into, it would be like someone coming from my fellowship and coming here to yours. Okay? And you may have different views and ideas of what all that would be in the way of breaking commitment and loyalty and that kind of thing. But I would feel much safer for them making that change and moving here than if they would tell me, we're going to leave this fellowship and I'm not sure where we're going, or we're going to go hopping around at different churches and we're just going to see where God takes us. But this person's mother has said, if you leave this fellowship, you're going to hell. That puts a lot of weight on someone. And really, honestly, do you know that? Do you really know that? Can you tell someone that? Absolute. I mean, does any of us have that kind of knowledge and ability with the, you know, absolute authority to make that statement to someone? Isn't God the one that's really going to determine it? And somehow, it can just put a weight, a dampening on a person. My real fear would be that they could check out and decide, you know what, I'm going to be condemned any way I go, so what's it really matter what I choose? And they throw it to the wind, and they make no commitment to anything solid. And then how are you going to feel? Spiritual abuse can be caused by using God and Scripture to attack, belittle, put down people, and shame them, and cause them to feel like that they're less than. Use God and Scripture without love as a standard of performance. Use God and Scripture to emphasize standards the Bible never communicates. We see a lot of people that come out of very conservative culture backgrounds, and many of them, as a matter of fact, I just had a young man, and the last day he was there, he put this book up on my counter and said, here's a book I wrote, and the name of it is The Unwritten Book. And it deals a lot with focusing on things that were cultural things that were taught and was instilled in him as a child. But he never knew, he never had any explanation at all given to him of any biblical reference that would support or substantiate the principle behind it. So it was like, you do this. And the mantra within that particular fellowship that he come out of, I've heard on a number of occasions people describe it in just these many words. You do right, you live right, or else you're going to hell. And the living right and doing right is being in conformity to everything that is given to you as the culture has decided it. And outside of that, nothing else really matters. Well, that leaves a really, really wide open void of questions of why. I mean, I think we have really good reasoning and reasons behind a lot of the principles that we express in a practical way, but sometimes those things can step on someone, and they can cause them to check out. Use God and Scripture to shun or withdraw from people emotionally, and that can cause a person to feel like love is conditional. That it's conditional based on your performance and where you are. And God doesn't express his love to us conditionally. As a matter of fact, I don't believe there's anywhere that we can go and really anything that we can do to escape God loving us. Now, he gets disappointed with us, and he would like to see us change. As a matter of fact, as a pastor, I think I was completely misunderstood on this one basis, and that is this: by accepting a person where they are, I was interpreted as approving of what they do. And that wasn't true. I didn't care for what they were doing. I felt like change needed to happen. But I still wanted to accept them so that I could at least try to understand them. And that kind of abuse can cause a person to develop a head knowledge versus a heart experience. It's difficult connecting emotionally with God or to really sensing Him being there and being personal and being real and alive. Can tend to see Jesus the same way as the abuser, that He is this hard, holding up the gavel, the hammer type of individual to smite at any little infraction. It promotes legalism versus grace. And I'm all about having form. I'm all about respecting things that can be in place as a means or an expression of the grace of God upon our heart. One time, I think the apostles, or Paul might have even, Barnabas, I think it was, when they had came to Antioch and they had seen the grace of God, it just, they took heart, and it strengthened them, and it gave them courage. They seen grace working in a person's life. Pressures on others to perform spiritually, that can all be imposed on a person. So there are those aspects of abuse. And then verbal abuse. Characteristics of a verbally abused person is being emotionally detached, disassociating. There's a clip, a guy shares a testimony, and he's a professor at the University of Michigan currently, or that's where he was when he gave this testimony. But when he was a young boy, his father felt called, and they moved to Ecuador. And when they moved to Ecuador, the more prominent language was Spanish. And so his father, who was very harsh and very stern and abrupt, he described him as more kind of like a dictator. He felt like that there was no real way to get close to his father, and he always was fearful when he got in his presence. His father called him and his brother in and said, because we live here in Ecuador and you guys are going to be walking to school, I want you to learn the address where we're living in Spanish. And he was very explicit, and he explained it, and this boy remembers listening, but all that he could remember is being fearful that he wasn't going to get this right, and he was going to mess up, and then he was going to come under the hand of his father for not getting it right. And that's all he was thinking about. And he didn't even know what his father asked him to do. And he shares this in the testimony. He said, I just didn't even get it. So, you got that? Yeah, I got it. And they left. Well, his father brought him back in a few weeks later and said, okay, tell me what the address is. He didn't even know what he was supposed to do, so he just sort of stood there kind of dumbfounded. And his father backhanded him and really scolded him for disobeying him and not doing what he had asked him to do. But he said, I literally, when anyone would lecture, when anyone would speak to me in a way that I felt that kind of pressure, something in my mind just checked out and I couldn't even concentrate. I couldn't even think. Later, this guy, he was a fast runner, and there was a relay race. And he was given the instruction, and he was put on the relay team, and he was the last one to carry the baton across the finish line. And he said, I'd never run in a race before. Everybody said, hey, you need to come out, you need to be involved in this thing. So he said, okay, put me on the team. And they put him last because he was fast. And so the baton was given to him, and he just tore off and just left everyone in the dust. I mean, he was way out front. But he comes up to the finish line, and he says, I ran up to it, and here someone had pulled a ribbon across, and he didn't know what that thing was there for. He guessed everybody needed to stop here so we could all catch up. So he just stopped. The next guy comes running through and breaks the ribbon and wins the race. And he said he felt like an idiot. And he said, the instructions were probably even given to me. But he said, I just clouded up, and I didn't get it. That's disassociating. That's when you fog up and you can't remember or you can't concentrate on something. Sometimes I'll have people fill out forms for me, and I handed this form, I just slid it over in front of this husband and wife, and I said, why don't you just do it right here real quickly? And he just picked it right up and started into it. I noticed her, and she just was staring at it. And so I didn't say anything. I thought, well, maybe she's just thinking about this whole thing. I didn't want to pressure her. Finally, 2 or 3 minutes went by, and she's not doing nothing. She's just staring at the paper. And I said, is something wrong? And she said when she was in kindergarten, first day, she said, we were given a paper and were told to write our name and just to see if we could put letters in and if we knew how to do that. She said that was the instruction given. I remember the paper being put down in front of my desk, but I was so scared that first day. I was like paralyzed in fear that I didn't even understand what the teacher said. And when the teacher come around to gather up the papers, she scolded her and really kind of just made a point to emphasize or to get on her case because she had, don't you know how to write your name? Why didn't you do what I asked you? And she said from that day forward, when I was in school, all the way through school, anytime I took a test or a paper was put in front of me, a form to fill out, even if it's for a driver's license, I freeze. I just freeze. Now, you and I might hear that and think, how silly. I mean, come on. You know, just get over it already. I mean, it was kindergarten. You know, just push it aside. But sometimes things can have some really lasting consequences. Incidentally, this girl was an adopted girl, and she come from a different kind of background, so there were probably other things that were contributing too. So you look at it, you know what I did? I said, it's okay. You mind if I just ask you the questions and I'll fill the form out? And she was okay with that. Sometimes just taking and not trying to force her, I could have easily sat there and said, hey, look, if you're not going to do anything here while you're here, how do you expect me to do anything for you? How do you expect me to help you? And that would have just shut her down. It's like trying to understand what a person has experienced and trying to meet that. And we can do that with in most any area that we interact with other people in, and especially in our marriage. It's like stepping through, and I know sometimes things can become a misunderstanding and we might react to it. I'm going to share that right after lunch, just the ways that we can identify these things and how we can actually care about them, because I don't want to stay here. I'm really told my wife this morning, I said, this is really the pits. I'm going to be talking about all this kind of like almost heavy weight, pushing everyone down into a kind of almost a dull place, and then we're going to say, okay, we're going to break for lunch. How appetizing is that? But we're just trying to, you know, we're just going to have to do it just simply because it wasn't going to work for me to care about it and then not share what we're caring about. So that's kind of where we are. It can cause a person to get angry. Someone yells at them, and then they can it can just cause them to respond in anger. They can become defiant, or they can get quiet, and they can just recluse. A lot of times I'll ask them, was there a special place that you used to go whenever you would? Did you ever get lonely? Where would you go when you get lonely? And people will say, I just went to my room. I had one boy said, there was a place out back, and we lived close to a river, and I'd walk down the path, and there was a tree down there. I used to go, and I'd just sit there all alone. I'd just sit there just to get away. And it was a place that I could escape, and I could just go get quiet, just to escape and remove from the pressure. Person can develop low self-esteem. They're being yelled at all the time, and they feel like they can never do anything right. Those are characteristics. Abuse, I think you can kind of get the idea how that it can affect a person and cause them to react in relationship. We're going to, I think, break for lunch. I'm not sure if or we're gonna. You want me to pray, or you have some announcements, or? I think we're ready, aren't we? Yeah. Why don't let's just bow our heads.